Imagine a world where cigarettes are considered harmless, acid rain is dismissed as natural, and climate change remains controversial, despite overwhelming scientific evidence. This isn't science fiction, it's recent history. A small group of influential scientists, primarily Cold War-era physicists, systematically created confusion about scientific findings that threatened industries they ideologically supported. Their strategy? Manufacturing doubt. As one tobacco executive candidly wrote in 1969, "Doubt is our product, since it is the best means of competing with the body of fact that exists in the minds of the general public." This blueprint for science denial would shape public discourse on critical issues for decades to come. When research conclusively linked smoking to cancer, tobacco companies faced an existential threat. Rather than directly challenging the evidence, they created an alternative narrative emphasizing uncertainty. "More research is needed," became their mantra, while they funded studies designed to find alternative explanations for lung cancer. The genius of this approach was its asymmetry. Scientists must prove their case beyond reasonable doubt, while denial requires only raising questions. What's remarkable is how successfully this strategy transferred to other issues. The same scientists who defended tobacco, particularly physicists Frederick Seitz and S. Fred Singer, later applied identical tactics to acid rain, the ozone hole, and climate change. These weren't random connections. Documents revealed deliberate recruitment of scientists with established credentials who could lend authority to industry positions. The strategy exploited a fundamental aspect of science itself, its inherent caution and acknowledgement of uncertainty, turning scientists' careful qualifications into weapons against their own conclusions. These merchants of doubt were primarily physicists whose careers thrived during the Cold War through weapons development and defense research. Frederick Seitz worked on the atomic bomb before becoming president of the National Academy of Sciences. S. Fred Singer directed the National Weather Satellite Service, while William Nirenberg led the Scripps Institution of Oceanography while pursuing defense projects. Beyond scientific backgrounds, they shared hawkish Cold War politics. They viewed environmental regulations as threats to capitalism and potential vehicles for socialism. After the Cold War ended, they redirected their focus to fighting environmentalism. Their defense of free markets evolved into an ideological campaign against any science suggesting capitalism produced harmful effects requiring regulation. The George C. Marshall Institute, founded in 1984 to support Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative, became their primary platform for challenging environmental science. Their consistent strategy? Attack both the science and the scientists, portraying researchers as politically motivated while positioning themselves as objective defenders of sound science. By the late 1970s, scientific evidence had firmly established that sulfur dioxide emissions from coal-burning power plants were causing acidification of lakes and forests. When Reagan took office in 1981 on a deregulatory platform, his administration turned to William Nirenberg to chair a review panel on acid rain. Though most panel members affirmed the scientific consensus, the White House inserted Fred Singer into the panel, where he consistently emphasized uncertainties and costs of regulation. The battle over ozone depletion further refined the doubt strategy. When scientists discovered that chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs, were destroying stratospheric ozone, the chemical industry launched a multi-pronged attack challenging every aspect of the theory. Despite systematic research disproving each objection and the discovery of the Antarctic ozone hole in 1985 providing undeniable evidence, Singer maintained opposition through sophisticated counter-narratives, claiming the ozone hole was natural and that stratospheric chlorine came mostly from natural sources, despite clear evidence to the contrary. Many Americans think global warming is a recent scientific concern, yet research on carbon dioxide and climate dates back 150 years. By 1979, scientific understanding was already solid. A National Academy of Sciences panel concluded that doubling CO2 would likely cause about 3°C warming, remarkably consistent with today's estimates. When NASA scientist James Hansen testified to Congress in 1988 that global warming had begun, the Marshall Institute found a new mission, challenging climate science. Their 1989 white paper claimed warming didn't track CO2 increases, arguing instead that temperatures matched solar activity cycles. However, they had cherry-picked data, showing only one diagram from Hansen's research while omitting others that demonstrated the combined effects of CO2, volcanoes, and solar activity. Singer launched a different attack by misappropriating Roger Revelle's reputation, a climate science pioneer who had mentored Al Gore. While Revelle was hospitalized after a heart attack, Singer published a paper with Revelle as second author, containing Singer's own phrases, not Revelle's. After Revelle's death, this paper was weaponized during the 1992 election to attack Gore, misrepresenting Revelle's actual climate change views. The Merchants of Doubt constructed an elaborate facade of institutes, conferences, and publications that mimicked legitimate science without following its standards. These entities sponsored lavish conferences, funded selective research, and created pseudoscientific journals with superficial peer review, all while avoiding research that might contradict their predetermined conclusions. This sophisticated doubt machine received substantial backing from ideologically aligned think tanks funded by conservative foundations and corporate interests. Investigations revealed how ExxonMobil alone channeled over $8 million to 40 different organizations working to challenge climate science consensus. These financial relationships were often obscured through complex arrangements, making their true sources difficult to trace. A telling shift occurred in these merchants' output around the 1970s. Citation analysis shows their peer-reviewed research publications effectively ceased, after which they produced primarily commentary pieces and letters to editors. Despite being physicists, they increasingly spoke outside their expertise, offering opinions on epidemiology, ecology, and climate modeling, specialized fields they hadn't mastered. Our fundamental problem is an erroneous view of science. We expect absolute certainty, but science actually provides expert consensus based on accumulated evidence. When scientific questions are truly settled, like the Earth's roundness, there aren't sides anymore, just accepted knowledge. Yet journalism's he said, she said framework gives equal weight to individual contrarians and the collective wisdom of thousands of scientists. Modern science is fundamentally collective. Even breakthrough discoveries require verification by the broader scientific community. Frustrated contrarians, rejected within scientific channels, took their claims directly to public opinion, bypassing established protocols that have tested scientific veracity for centuries. We make decisions under uncertainty daily without paralysis. As sociologist Michael Smithson notes, all social relations are trust relations. We trust doctors to diagnose illness, mechanics to fix cars, pilots to fly planes. Similarly, we must trust scientific experts while evaluating their credentials, research quality, and funding sources. When we allow manufactured doubt to delay action on climate change, we aren't being cautious, we're gambling with our future based on claims from ideologically motivated individuals against the judgment of thousands of scientists. Science provides no absolute certainty, but its robust track record gives us a solid basis for action. As epidemiologist Sir Austin Bradford Hill noted, scientific work is always incomplete. But this does not confer upon us a freedom to ignore the knowledge we already have or to postpone the action that it appears to demand.